From the Radio Ranch in beautiful Sugar Land, Texas, where life truly is sweeter. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Thursday, January 18th, 2024. I am the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
You're yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. Let's get things started officially with...
The Daily Denogram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. It says here, many people quit looking for work once they find a job. It's so true, yeah. See, I want a job working from noon to one with an hour off for lunch.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of the blogcast, shall we?
Twisted history.
Let's do this.
Gather round, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
For sure.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same, you need to know your twisted history.
Yeah, if you say so.
You might be quizzed.
That's incentive enough right there. All right, kids, it was on this day in 1981, Phil Smith and Phil Mayfield parachuted off a Houston skyscraper, becoming the first two people to base jump from subjects in all four categories. Buildings, antenna, spans, you know, like bridges, and earth, for instance, cliffs. Brave guys. And maybe with a touch of crazy. And it was on this day in 1991, in the longest tennis match at the Australian Open, Boris Becker beat Italy's Omar Camparis in 5 hours and 11 minutes. Hundreds of spectators suffered from rubberneck for days afterward, you can bet on that. See, that's where your head keeps turning from side to side, involuntarily.
That's just stupid!
I'm going to try to do a half-decent recap here. Back on Tuesday, we got word that the Biden administration was coming down hard on the state of Texas when Governor Abbott sent in the Texas National Guard to this park down there in Eagle Pass just to take things over, arrest people who are entering the country illegally and sending them back. So the Biden administration were just... Johnny on the spot in pointing fingers. You know, they wanted to vilify the National Guard, get public opinion to turn on them. They need that border to be open, you know. Keep the flow of illegals coming into the country because Barack Obama, who's the real boss, wants to destroy the country. I wish I could convey to you the number of people I have come in contact with who don't believe that. Number one, they don't believe that Obama's really running the show. And number two, that Obama wants to destroy the country. But he does. He wants to destroy the country. You just watch. In another 10 years, he and Michelle are going to leave the country. Because it will have become so unbearable to live in. Well, I think Donald Trump has some plans to head that off at the pass, you know. But anyhow... It looks like evidence is coming out that the accusation of Texas National Guard being responsible for 3 deaths, that's a statement they made. Well, I'm not sure if they made that yesterday or if they did that back on Tuesday. But turns out it's untrue. And as the media loves to say, baseless. So the government admitted in court that Texas was informed 1 hour after they died. So, as Fox reported it, let me just read from the Fox account. Tragically, a woman and 2 children drowned last night in the Shelby Park area of Eagle Pass, which was commandeered by the state of Texas earlier this week. In responding to a distress call from the Mexican government, Border Patrol agents were physically barred by Texas officials from entering the area. That statement went on to call Texas Governor Abbott's policies cruel, dangerous, and inhumane, and Texas' blatant disregard for federal authority over immigration poses grave risks. Well, the White House had been similarly scathing over the deaths on Saturday evening. Now, who are they quoting here? I just want to make sure that I'm quoting the right person. Oh, okay, this is Fox again. On Friday night, a woman and 2 children drowned near Eagle Pass, and Texas officials blocked U.S. Border Patrol from attempting to provide emergency assistance. Okay, this is the statement from the government. the Biden government. While we continue to gather facts about the circumstances of these tragic deaths, one thing is clear. Governor Abbott's political stunts are cruel, inhumane, and dangerous. U.S. Border Patrol must have access to the border to enforce our laws. Well, I can't argue with that, except for the fact that the U.S. Border Patrol is not enforcing our laws. They're enforcing Biden's laws. Then it says here, however, in a court filing as part of ongoing litigation, the DOJ said Mexican officials advised Border Patrol at 9 p.m. local time that the migrants had drowned at 8 p.m. Okay. Well, it turns out that the drownings had nothing to do with the state of Texas or the Texas National Guard. So now they're trying to do damage control there in the Biden administration. I don't know if that's going to work. But someone who calls himself End Wokeness posted on X, breaking, the Biden administration is quietly backtracking on their blood libel against the Texas National Guard. Last week, Biden officials accused Texas of preventing the feds from saving three drowning migrants. You know, this is, it's getting crazier and crazier because it seems like it's the Biden administration against us. They have demonized us, you know, we conservatives. They've demonized us to the point where, you know, I mean, how many times has Biden gotten up and given a speech with a creepy red and blue lighted background, good communist colors, that MAGA is the greatest single threat against democracy? Now, the government just admitted in court that Texas was only informed a full hour after these three people died, drowned. The Biden DOJ tried to use this tragedy as a pretext to seizing control of Shelby Park and opening it up again for illegals to freely enter the country. Now, I don't know about you, but I would call this open border of ours the single greatest threat to our democracy. We already have, I don't know, how many experts warning against a major terrorist attack on our soil. And that makes for good politics, too. I mean, if you want to demonize the Biden administration, that's a good way to do it. You know, just get out there and tell as many people as you can, grab as many cameras and microphones as you can, and get the word out that the Biden administration is destroying the country and leaving us open and vulnerable to a major terrorist attack. It's great politics. Is it really true? Maybe. Because think about it. If somebody's really intent on scoring a major terrorist attack against the United States, remember, these terrorists, they pick symbols. Symbols of our democracy, symbols of our country, symbols of our culture. Why do you think they hit the World Trade Center in 01? That's why. They wanted something symbolic. And they succeeded. It was spectacular. So if there's a certain entity who's got a thing against our country and is determined to launch a major terrorist attack, they don't really need our open border to get in. Capish? I mean, if there's going to be a major terrorist attack, it's going to happen whether that border is open or not. Now, don't take that as a defense of the Biden administration, because it's not. I guarantee you, 10 to 15 years from now, we are really going to feel the cultural change in this country with the upwards of 11 million illegal aliens who poured into this country. Think back to a better time when Donald Trump was our president. The economy was really rolling along. You could pull up to the pumps and fill your car for, you know, maybe about $20. Hey, that's the way it was. There were a lot of places around the country, particularly Texas. Some places were, like Tennessee, where gas was several cents below $2 a gallon. And maybe filling the tank for $20 is a stretch, because most cars have either 15 or 18 gallon gas tanks. But just the same, you think back to those great days when Donald Trump was our president. and how the media treated the man. I mean, they worked 24/7, 365, to discredit the man any way they possibly could. And the media had to have two departments, one to report the news, and then another department to backtrack and correct the news they originally reported, right? Well, something kind of ominous happened the other night there in Iowa, Tuesday night. MSNBC's refusal to air Trump's victory speech and the media platform's framing of his supporters as fascists. Isn't that libel? Maybe somebody will come up with a case against the networks, charging them with libel. But yes, they really did frame the Trump fans, the Trump voters, as fascists. And this serves, really, as, I guess, an omen of future election coverage. At least that's what Jonathan Turley says. You know him. I mean, there are two extremely brilliant legal scholars. Alan Dershowitz, Jonathan Turley. Well, this time around, it's Jonathan Turley, and he took notice of what happened Tuesday night and immediately saw a forthcoming trend. Now, when Trump scored that victory at the Iowa caucus, Rachel Maddow, MSNBC co-host, told her viewers that they would not air his speech because he speaks untrue things. I don't know. I think that would be somewhat libelous right there. But about his speech, Maddow said that the news platform will keep an eye on that and let his audience know if he makes any noteworthy, substantive, and important statements. My God! What arrogance! Then she continued, the reason I'm saying this is, of course, there's a reason that we and other news organizations have generally stopped giving an unfiltered live platform to remarks made by former President Donald Trump. It's not out of spite. Bullcrap! I digress. It's not out of spite. It's not a decision that we relish. It's a decision that we regularly revisit, and honestly, it's not an easy decision. And then she said, it costs MSNBC to broadcast untrue things. When she said, if we're worried about the rise in authoritarianism in this country, if we're worried about this potential rise of fascism in this country, if we're worried about our country falling to an authoritarian and potentially fascist form of government, the leader is trying to do that is potentially a part of that equation. But people wanting that is a much bigger part of that equation. Now, first of all, Rachel Maddow is not particularly brilliant. She fit a mold that MSNBC's management wanted. She's a lesbian. Now, co-host, first of all, before I go any further, let me just reiterate that MSNBC's entire personality lineup is made up of haters. These are people who hate you and me. Because we're conservatives. We cherish this nation's constitution. Everybody on the air at MSNBC is a hater. For instance, Joy Reid. She was a co-host on that particular broadcast. And she complained that Iowa is a state that's overrepresented by white Christians. What? You just happen to have, through pure demographics, a lot of white Christians in Iowa. I don't see throngs and throngs of black people farming. I'm not saying there aren't black farmers. There are. But the majority of blacks in this country make their living doing something other than farming. Yeah, Iowa is a state that's overrepresented by white Christians. And then she said she reached out to Robert Jones of the Public Religion Research Institute to ask what white Christians get out of supporting Trump. And then she quoted him as saying,
Well, she's, to quote her, she's,
he said the following: they see themselves as the rightful inheritors of this country, and Trump has promised to give it to them. See, that's the narrative that the radical leftists among the black population in this country are trying to put forth. That's the narrative. She went on to claim that white Christians believe that anyone who's not them is a fraudulent American. So enter Jonathan Turley, who wrote in his opinion piece, in an early glimpse of what to expect from coverage of this election, MSNBC and CNN hosts went into full rage mode with the Iowa caucus results. MSNBC host Joy Reid led this effort by declaring that white Christians are racists who want minorities to bow down to them. Mr. Turley said that in leftists' attempt to point the finger at Trump supporters as racists, its own racism is exposed. Bang, boom, right there. There you go. Let me repeat that. In leftists' attempt to point the finger at Trump supporters as racists, its own racism is exposed. I would like to add to that something here, a little factoid. These blacks, these extreme leftist blacks, who are trying to typify white people as racists, have never spent more than 5 minutes' time in a predominantly white community to get to know white people and what they really think, what they really believe, how they worship, how they work, how they make their livings, how they educate their children. They have absolutely no knowledge of these white people that they so religiously demonize. So, Turley said, much like our politics, our media often seems captured by the most extreme elements of our society. Amen. He says it explains why the media is now at an all-time low in terms of trust. However, the most concerning aspect is that this is just the beginning of January. We have to make it to November. And that's very true. But not only that, we not only have to make it to November. When Donald Trump wins, how is the media going to treat him then? The mainstream media is going to do anything and everything they can to demonize the man. And believe me, the lies from the media are going to be flying like confetti. Now, you may remember Michael Schellenberger. Good man, good journalist, author, founder of the media platform Public, called MSNBC's refusal to broadcast Trump's speech elite panic. And I think that's a good notation. I think that's a very good point. Elite panic. He wrote on X, it's as primitive and superstition as the one that declared some women to be witches capable of casting spells. Former President Trump just towered in his win at 51%. That 51% is pretty good when you consider Ron DeSantis got 21%, Haley got 19%, and Ramaswamy got 7.7%. So this was a big win for Trump. The detractors, of course, are saying, well, he only got 51%. Yeah, but he got more than the other three candidates combined. So Schellenberger wrote on X, he said, both CNN and MSNBC carried the entirety of the speech by DeSantis after openly refusing to carry the speech by Trump, even though Trump won a landslide with 51% against DeSantis, 21%. It's madness. CNN and MSNBC are flagrantly embracing their role as propagandists. Amen. Boy, this guy Schellenberger, I like him. He's sharp. He really impressed me with his testimony. Congressional testimony, and when he was talking about the Twitter files. Boy, that was compelling stuff, and Schellenberger was right on the money. So in a January 13th article, Schellenberger wrote that voters disagree with the experts and journalists, and you know that really pisses the experts and journalists off. When you disagree with them, oh, that just burns them up. How dare you disagree? Yeah, so he wrote, the latest polls show they have a more favorable view of Trump than Biden, and more would vote for Trump than Biden in six swing states. In Iowa, where Republicans will caucus to decide who to nominate as president, Trump remains over 30 points ahead of his rivals. Now, Schellenberger referenced more stories surfacing, speaking of top Democrats like Obama and Eric Holder, expressing fear of another Trump presidency, while former First Lady Michelle Obama said she's terrified about what could possibly happen if Mr. Trump's reelected. Well, I'll tell you why they're terrified. They won't have the power anymore. That's what they're afraid of. That's it. But they make it sound like this is a great national conflagration. So Schellenberger said that though much can happen between now and November 7th, of course, he says the chances of Trump becoming America's next president are higher than not. He said Biden could still drop out and be replaced by a more popular Democrat. There could be a black swan event such as financial crisis, terrorist attack, or war that changes the calculus of voters. Or a court may order the incarceration of Trump and prevent him from being elected. However, there's no guarantee that any of those events would help rather than hurt Biden. Even if voters don't elect Trump president, the establishment has undermined its legitimacy in its reaction to him. I mean, this goes back to that analogy that I drew a couple of weeks ago. You know, the little kid throwing a tantrum wants the candy off the shelf there at the grocery store, and you say no, and the child throws himself down on the floor on his belly, pounding against the floor with his fists and his feet. And then you just stand there and laugh at him. That's what we need to do. We just need to stand here and laugh at these people. I guarantee you, MSNBC and CNN, they're going to be nothing but cheerleaders for whoever is the candidate in November for the Democrats. J.D. Rucker, writing for Substack, says the corporate cheating scandals are always big news. They often result in huge fines and can lead to class action lawsuits when giant companies flub data to keep the public in the dark. But the latest automotive data cheating scandal is getting zero attention. Why? Because it's not the companies, but the U.S. Department of Energy that's doing the cheating. The reason, of course, is because they're desperate to push their so-called green agenda to fight so-called climate change, something which I might add has yet to be proven. This issue called climate change, human-made climate change, it hasn't been proven. So they intentionally manipulated fuel efficiency data so consumers wouldn't realize how awful electric vehicles really are. Now, I'm a gearhead. By the time I was 14, I was given a car by my dad. He said, here, you got 2 years to get this thing fixed up so you can drive it when you get your driver's license. Learned so much about cars. And yes, I am a fan of the internal combustion engine. But I actually like the way electric vehicles perform when it comes to going to 0 to 60, the way they corner, the way they handle, how quiet they are. I love that. But they're so impractical. And this is something the government is not telling you because they don't want to tell you. They want you to swallow hook, line, and sinker this fable about man-made climate change. Now, as the Wall Street Journal noted, this isn't a minor adjustment. The federal government allows EV companies to multiply their reported efficiency by nearly 700%. Look at that. The number's so big, my voice is giving out. Yeah, this is amazing. It says here, it's hard to think of a worse environmental scandal in recent years than Volkswagen's 2015 diesel emissions cheating. Remember that? The German automaker was rightly pursued by regulators, enforcement agencies, and class action lawyers. The scandal ended up costing Volkswagen an estimated $33 billion in fines and financial settlements and revealed the diesel emissions cheating was endemic. In 2020, Daimler AG, you know, Mercedes, made a $1.5 billion settlement over emissions cheating in Mercedes-Benz diesel vehicles. Last year, an engine maker, Cummins, they usually make those diesel engines for Ram pickups,
They agreed to pay $1.7 billion to settle claims that it skirted diesel emission standards. And in all of these cases, regulators punished car makers that had cut corners and misled the public. But when it comes to electric cars, the government has a cheating scandal of its own. That scandal, grabbing far fewer headlines, is buried deep in the Federal Register on page 36,987 of volume 65. When car makers test gasoline-powered vehicles for compliance with the Transportation Department's fuel efficiency rules, they must use real values measured in a laboratory. By contrast, under an Energy Department rule, car makers can arbitrarily multiply the efficiency of electric cars by 6.67. This means that although a 2022 Tesla Model Y tests at the equivalent of about 65 miles per gallon in a laboratory, roughly the same as a hybrid, it's counted as having an absurdly high compliance value of 430 miles per gallon, and that number has no basis in reality or in law. For exaggerating electric car efficiency, the government rewards car makers with compliance credits they can trade for cash. It's like I've been saying all along. Your government is subsidizing the manufacture and the purchase of electric vehicles. And the reason they're doing it is because they have to. Nobody can afford an EV. So they subsidize the manufacturer to build them, and they subsidize the buyer, the motorist, to buy them. It's all a lie. And I don't know if you caught this headline the other day, but it was pretty funny. Turns out there are lines and lines and lines of EVs in this cold weather all lined up waiting to charge up because the cold weather saps these vehicles of their range. I'm sorry. I just don't swallow everything the government tells me to do, hook, line, and sinker. I'm going to continue to drive my Dodge Charger with a beautiful internal combustion engine. And I get 33 miles to the gallon in that thing on the highway, too, by the way. To the Comedy Corner with Ross Bennett.
I grew up in this little town in Hornell, and I was raised to always believe in God, but I always trusted that God would take care of me. And he knew what I needed, because we had a thing called a snow day. Applaud if you know what a snow day is. Oh. Because I'll work down south. I'll do shows down in Florida. I talk about a snow day. They think it's a day that drugs are delivered. And I say, no. A snow day, it's a gift from God. A day that I'd wake up, look out my bedroom window, see snow piled halfway up the window, and I'd say, there's a very good chance I'll not be going to school today. My bedroom was on the second floor of the house. And I'd run downstairs and sit in front of the radio. The radio is where they announced the schools that were canceled. And they'd announce my school canceled. And this is when I started to question if my mother really loved me. Because you have to think about this. This is the worst day of the year. It's a blizzard. It's 40-mile-an-hour winds. It's sub-zero. But she insisted I go outside and play. She stuffed me in my snowsuit, sent me outside to play in my oh-so-flexible snowsuit made out of nylon. Imagine falling on an icy hill in a nylon snowsuit. Might as well be made of Teflon. Wasn't that the Bennett boy? He fast. That boy fast. He flying. Snowsuit wasn't the biggest problem. The biggest problem was a scarf. My mother knitted me a scarf. Had to be 20 feet long. And she'd stuff me in my snowsuit, wrap the scarf around my face like she's going to pull start the lawnmower. But she'd always leave a little crack by my right eye. And she'd take my glasses and put them back on the outside of my scarf. It's amazing I wasn't beat up more. There were three things to do on a snow day for fun. There were toboggans, sleds, and flying saucers. were for large families that couldn't afford a sled for everyone. A toboggan is about a 15-foot long strip of varnished wood upon which you can pile three or four generations of a family and allow them to hurtle together to certain death, singing the old traditional tobogganing song. If you know it, join with me tonight.
Make it a terrific Thursday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's bombastic blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.